electric cars are not proven to be future or at least present, you know. People don't find themselves convenient in these cars because if you don't own your own driveway, your own parking spot, your own garage, if you don't own a wall box or a socket, you know, you're done. You can't rely only on public charges. It's too inconvenient.
Hey gang, in this episode, we're going to be talking to my new pal, Matas Buzelis. He is the head of communications at Car Vertical. We're going to be talking all about the car market and where things are headed starting today and into perpetuity. Let's go. The car business is rapidly changing and modern car dealers are meeting the demand. I'm Michael Cirillo, and together we'll explore the best strategies, ideas, and tools to create a thriving life in and out of the business. This is the Dealer Playbook. Okay, I had to ask you, I mean, beautiful accent, Formula One. I was like, this guy's not in America. I mean, America's all about NASCAR. And so as it turns out, you are based in Lithuania.
Exactly.
And I got to tell you, man, what I love about this is I grew up in Canada, and I feel like in Canada, we are aware that the rest of the world exists.
Yeah.
And sometimes, and please, DPB gang, you know, I love you. Sometimes I feel like America thinks only America exists. And so anytime I can have someone from somewhere else in the world in our beloved industry give me some insights about kind of the global landscape, I'm excited about it. Matas, thank you so much for joining me here on the Dealer Playbook podcast.
Thank you. Thank you. Pleasure to be here.
Okay, let's dig into this. First of all, I got to ask you some questions. What is the Association of Automotive Intelligence?
Yeah, so we decided, you know, that we have to do something to fight fraud. And fraud is a big topic, big thing, at least here in Europe. But I think it's a global phenomenon, you know, when it comes to odometer fraud, when it comes to cars with hidden damages and things like that. So, yeah, we offer, you know, history reports at the company, but we decided to go one step further. So we established the association where we basically invite various companies, you know, various international businesses to join the association to have this mutual voice that needs more protection of the public interest, perhaps, is the main goal, you know. Because in the end of the day, at least in Europe, as cars are moving from one country to another, they are changing regularly, pair of hands. In the end of the day, people are still being scammed and fraud is still there. So the authorities, you know, even at these global institutions like European Commission or European Union, they don't do enough to make this stop. So we decided to create this association and then to maybe get in touch with these officials, with authorities, and ask what do you think about, you know, how can we change that? How can we prevent people from getting up, stumbling upon these fraudulent cars? So that is the main goal. Yeah.
I love it. How easy? Now, this is where I am kind of ignorant. You know, if I was to transact a vehicle from Canada to the United States, there's a lot of regulation. Is it easier to sell from one European country to another? Does that happen often?
My God, it's easy. You can't imagine. I mean,
really,
whenever I was looking for a car myself, obviously, yeah. We in Lithuania, we have quite a small market. So it's 1.7 million of cars registered on the roads. So it's a small, you know, small range to select a car from. But what I did, I entered the most popular German classified website. And, you know, I knew I wanted the panoramic roof, the, you know, double layer glasses and things like that, you know. So I checked all the filters and I got the car from there, from Germany. I got a company which is owned, well, at least the head of sales was my friend. So I asked him to help me bring the car from there. But it's actually easy. There are hundreds or thousands of car buyers that are personally traveling to foreign country and coming back on their own, you know, with that new car they purchased. So it's really easy. You get these, what's the word? Temporary number plates, perhaps. Is the right?
Yes. Yeah. Yep.
So you get these and you simply drive back. You get these and the insurance and you drive back and you go through a couple of procedures, you know, for inspecting the car, whether everything's fine, checking the VIN and things like that. And that's it, really. So it's even, you know, even a car from United States to have here, it's easy. So, so imagine this. I mean, Europe is a massive, massive used car market, you know. But countries like, let's say, Spain or Portugal, they don't allow these used cars from the United States. It's nearly impossible to import a Mustang, any car that they wish to drive there. Where, for example, Lithuania accounts for about 25% of all used American cars flowing to Europe. So it's basically gates for American cars to Europe.
Wow.
Yeah, that's
so there's a lot. There are a lot of millennials cruising down the streets in Ford Mustangs in Lithuania. Is that what you're saying?
Actually, in some regions, you could see so many challenges, so many Mustangs.
Really?
It's crazy. It's crazy. And people are, you know,
what do you see the most often of? Like what cars would be more common as a used American car in Europe?
I think it's BMWs are the most common. BMWs and Audis and maybe Mercedes Benzes. Yeah.
Wait a minute. Hold on. Time out. Are you saying that they're bringing, oh, look, see, StreamYard, we're recording here, and it gave me a thumbs up.
Yeah.
Are you saying, I just want to make sure this is a glass. I got to take my glasses off to process this one.
Are you saying
That's how they can tell us apart now. They know you're the one that's got the glass. Are you saying that Lithuanian citizens are bringing used BMWs, Mercedes Benz, and Audis from America to Europe, and we're here feeling special when we get to have one that we know was made in Europe?
Exactly.
What is happening? Is that what you're saying?
You know, I think it's the difference in the regulation, because as far as I know, you know, if the car is older than 25 years, only then you're allowed to import it to the United States. Something like that. There is a limit of, I think they control the import market somehow. While in here in Europe, it's only a matter of safety. I think if the car is okay, if it passes all the technical inspections, you're good to go. If it has kilometers on the clock, if it has a fog light in the rear, that's good. Maybe I think there is also the difference in the corner lights. Maybe it's red on some cars instead of orange or yellow. Yeah.
Right. But these are all minor things that they could.
It's easy to change. Yeah. Yeah. And we have this problem.
This is bizarre.
Yeah, we have this problem because people, let's say an example, a G series, G generation 3 series BMW. So usually they import these cars, well, damaged. They are damaged. They are from auctions like Copart and the other one. It's with a very difficult name for me to pronounce. But they import these cars damaged. And the first thing they need to do to have the cars going is to repair them. And because BMWs are so popular here, what people do, they steal parts. And it's such a big problem. I mean, if you own a BMW, you're paying double for insurance when compared to Mercedes-Benz or Audi, you know? So this is a big problem. But people are basically importing American cars because of the affordability and because of the equipment trim. So I think Americans are purchasing these cars brand new with better equipment than Europeans do. Well, maybe in somewhere in Switzerland, maybe they are speccing the cars like you know, there's no tomorrow. But usually cars are a little bit cheaper here. And also there are very little diesels in United States. So people are now shifting to petrol powered cars. And
interesting.
And it couldn't be easier to sell American cars any time before than it is now. Yeah.
You just opened up a can of worms here because I drive my beloved diesel. I look at regular petrol powered vehicles now like they are some sort of inferior type of vehicle, because the minute I went to diesel, I don't know what it is. Something magical happened. Hey, before we hop back into this episode of the Dealer Playbook, we got to give a shout out to today's sponsor, AutoFi. AutoFi helps progressive dealers like you sell smarter, not harder, on your dealership website and now in your showroom too. AutoFi solves the everyday problems dealers actually face, like bottlenecks at the sales desk, customer distrust, and decision overload. And their all-new showroom solution includes deal estimation, desking, lender routing, and an F&I menu, all in one powerful platform that bridges the gap between the CRM and DMS. Dealerships with AutoFi can manage the floor more efficiently, fast-track the yes, and make better lending decisions, enabling them to sell cars faster with higher satisfaction and more profit. In fact, deals with AutoFi take an average of 28 minutes from customer check-in to loan approval, and dealers are making $411 more back-end PVR per deal. Go to autofi.com/dealer playbook to learn more. That's autofi.com/dealer playbook and start selling smarter today. All right, let's hop back into this episode. The wormhole that you've just opened up here is, you know, obviously there's a lot of discussion about energy, ICE vehicles, EV powered vehicles. As we transition into talking about the used car market, because I'd love your vantage point there, maybe fill us in. What's happening in Europe as far as EVs? Is the EV narrative still very strong there? Is it still very favorable to buy an EV? Are there a lot of government, you know, incentives? Because here it depends on the day. It's like, yes, we're pro EV, then we're not, then, oh, it's, you know, we're cutting incentives, so there's not much of an incentive, and oh wait, they're more expensive to operate. What's the European vantage point now that I'm asking you, Matas, to be the spokesperson for all of Europe, and what is happening with EVs?
Oh, so, I mean, it's endless topic. I think we can continue here forever, but there are a couple of, I think, very important points, one of which is 2035. I think from 2035, all the member states of European Union, they couldn't sell brand new internal combustion engine powered cars. So it's all electric from 2035. So we don't have a lot of time left to play with these normal vehicles, let's say. Now, in United Kingdom, in Great Britain, they had this deadline 5 years sooner. So it was 2030. And we were like looking to the United Kingdom and thinking what will happen, because, you know, it's only about in very Western countries of Europe, it's only about 16 to maybe 18% of new cars market are electric cars. So it's still a rather unpopular choice, you know, by the majority. But the authorities in the UK, they saw that the sales are not getting traction. And what they decided to do, they decided to postpone the ban by 5 years. And that's the problem, because, you know, already businesses who are buying fleets of these EVs and all the manufacturers, they were already convinced to 2030s. And now it's like 5 years postponed. And I think the confidence is gone. So they don't have the UK's, you know, decision makers. They don't have the trust anymore. People are not buying electric cars, while millions are already invested in the infrastructure, you know, and all the future plans. So I think it's very interesting. But when we come back to the general picture of Europe, in some countries, as I said, it's like, you know, 16 or 17% of new cars market are electric. But in other countries, even in Italy, which is extremely strong player in the automotive industry, I think the market share is about 4.7%. So electric cars are not proven to be a future, or at least present, you know. People don't find themselves convenient in these cars, because if you don't own your own driveway, your own parking spot, your own garage, if you don't own a wall box or a socket, you know, you're done. You can't rely only on public charges. It's too inconvenient, because refueling a car is so much easier when you think about it. And, you know, I have a friend who did a project. So I think he drove a Nissan Leaf in maybe about 2 years ago. And he was driving the car around the Baltic Sea. So he started from Lithuania. He went to Latvia, Estonia, Finland, Sweden, and, you know, all the remaining countries around. And the extreme pain point is when you leave your own country and you see your batteries being drained out. So you have to stop to recharge. So then you stop at any random, you know, charging station. You have to download the app of that charging network. You have to connect your own, you know, account and connect your payment card. And they were in Finland and they couldn't find an English version of the app because it was in Finnish. So they had to go to a local grocery store to ask someone at the counter, could you please translate it for us? How can we do that? Because it's like 6% of the battery remaining. So it's so far from reality for majority, you know, for all the tasks you need. I think it's a good thing. An electric car is a good thing if you have a two-car garage. So one car you have, you can take it anywhere. It's maybe a gas or diesel powered car, comfy, spacious, practical, and easy to refill. The other car can be, let's say, a Volkswagen E-Up, which is at least in here, it's very popular. It's easy. You sit in, you press the button to defrost the windshield, and you're good to go, you know. And in the city, it's okay. But as the moment you leave the city, the car is out of its playground, you know. So,
very interesting. Well, and you know, the part that I still struggle to reconcile, as we segue into, you know, the question I have about the used car market. When you look at these deadlines that they've given us, 2030, 2035 now, maybe in another 5 years, it'll be 2040, and then they'll push it back to 2045. What I still can't wrap my mind around is the hundreds of millions of petrol-powered used vehicles on the streets. Nobody has said, oh, here's how we're going to phase all of those out by by this time period, which suggests to me that even, let's just say we met our EV deadline and all new vehicles sold in the year 2035 are going to be EV. We're still talking about what, 75 to 100 years, maybe 150 years before there's a full transition. And so did we, with this environmental narrative, did we actually solve anything? Or, you know, and I'm no conspiracy theorist, but did we not solve anything and it's all just powered by money? So I've got to ask, just because I know I don't want to get flagged. I don't want to get canceled. I don't want Apple to shut me down. What do you see for the used car market? What's happening right now as far as car market is concerned in the year 2024? Where do you see it moving maybe in the next 18 to 24 months?
Yeah, it's, you know, at least here across the Atlantic, we face in some certain markets quite a big uncertainty because, you know, these geopolitical tension, there are these sort of problems. For example, imagine if China really, really invades Taiwan, we will wait for brand new cars for 5 years. That's the case, you know, that's the reality if that's happening. My neighbor was waiting for his car for 2.5 years. So he purchased the car.
I've moved on by 2.5 years. Holy moly.
Exactly. So once you get the car, it's actually a little bit dated, you know? The only motivation was that everything got so much more expensive, so much more. The cars have become so much more expensive than they were like 3 years ago. You know, I remember brand new Toyota Camrys. They were selling for a price that you could now only pick up maybe a Corolla at the best bit, you know. So it's all these price increases and all these kind of things. I think they made the market a little bit slow down, you know. It's also the disrupted chain made, car manufacturing, it's not a volume business anymore, you know. So you don't need to make millions of cars to make money. You can make maybe hundreds of thousands to make the same, you know, because the profit margins have increased maybe. So these are the things. But regarding the used car market, because it's mostly concerned with the new cars, but regarding used car markets, now we see the prices are stabilizing, at least in Europe. They were increasing. And I, you know, the car I purchased 2 years ago, I could have sold it last year and get some, you know, with an increase, with a profit. So these were the levels the prices increased by. And I think now it stabilizes because of the inflation and all the people are, you know, judging if they really need to change their cars. Yeah. But it seems to be coming down to what it was in pre-COVID years, you know. So the transactions are increasing, at least in most countries. In 2024, I think it can be really stable if there are no more geopolitical nonsense or whatever the case is. But when we speak about used cars, we also have to not forget the fraud and all the, you know, pain points that car buyers are usually experiencing. So that's, I think,
Do you think because of the dependence we may see on the used car market, that's a real challenge? We're going to see an increase in perhaps fraud for, you know, people who are seeing the market stabilize, who still want to get more for their vehicle. So do you see that that's going to be probably a more prevalent issue moving forward?
I think, you know, we have to also pay attention to the technology itself, because there are ways the scammers and fraudulent people are making an impact to their cars. For example, there are devices who can make the clocking impossible to detect, you know, and there are no tools or no ways how to work around that sort of problem, at least yet. So even, you know, all these newer cars, they are easier to access with computers and diagnostic systems, easier usually to hack, easier even to steal, because maybe you heard how they steal cars in Great Britain. They are simply walking with these antennas next to the house, and they are spotting the keys left next to the door.
I've seen that.
Simply opening the doors and driving off.
The guy holds up an antenna. Yes, I've seen this, where a guy holds up an antenna looking thing.
Exactly.
And that extends the range of the key fob so that the car thinks the key fob is closer than it is.
Exactly. And they start the engine and they drive off.
Once they've driven off, now I'm curious.
Yeah.
Once they've driven off, and then they turn that car off. What do they do from there?
I think there are a couple of scenarios. One of which is they can make, they have these blank keys. They can connect some sort of like tools and create a key that will work with the car. So this is one way. Another way is to quickly disassemble the car. And it's only a matter of time. Usually when they steal these cars, they already have, you know, the order where to get the front bumper, where to get the engine, where to get all the connections are looking for these sort of parts in the black market. So it's another thing, you know.
But wow.
Yeah.
They're looking for all of those Mexican made American BMWs.
Yeah. Exactly. Yeah.
By and large, you know, obviously you are working on a solution to help mitigate that. What are you seeing globally outside of the European market? I know you guys do some work in Mexico and other parts of the world. Do you see the used car market stabilizing, or is it fluctuating by region?
I think it more depends on the region. It more depends. At least what we see in Europe. So It's usually two sides. It's West versus East, you know. East are always following West. So there are more electric cars in the West, and they are coming slowly to the Eastern side. Firstly, as used cars, and only in a couple of years, the market share of brand new electric cars are increasing as a follow, you know, of that sort of phenomenon. It's very, it depends on the market. I mean, it's impossible, I think, to find a way how to describe all the global used car markets at once, you know. But our main purpose, our main goal is like to have our hand right on the pulse of that sort of global market and to see what's happening, you know, how it's breathing and how can we help? How can we increase the level of trust, maybe the level of transparency? And by seeing that, we have found out that, for example, the level of fraud is absolutely stable. It's like rock solid. It doesn't move anywhere. Even these tools, you know, that can help to mitigate all these risks, they're not, in the end of the day, what's so effective in terms of making the fraud go away. So I think that's the main issue. Yeah.
Yeah. You know, it just goes to show, when it comes to retailing or selling or private selling vehicles, the number one thing that makes people most comfortable is having that level of transparency to ensure that we are getting the best exchange for our hard-earned money in exchange for something that we believe is going to do the best for us. And I mean, that transcends whether you're a retail car dealership or a private seller. It just goes to prove the proof point that provide as much transparent information as possible, speeds up the transaction, deepens the relationship. Man, I've really enjoyed this conversation. I always enjoy getting perspectives from other parts of the world. Matas Buzelas, thank you so much for joining me on the Dealer Playbook podcast. How can those watching and listening learn more and connect with you?
Yeah, feel free to find me on LinkedIn, you know, on Matas Buzelas. And yeah, visit our website, kavertical.com. Just see how it looks like. And that's really it.
Thank you. Thanks for joining me on the podcast.
Big pleasure. Big pleasure.
Hey, thanks for listening to the Dealer Playbook podcast. If you enjoyed tuning in, please subscribe, share, and hit that like button. You can also join us and the DPB community on social media. Check back next week for a new Dealer Playbook episode. Thanks so much for joining.